So I'm going to take the Haftarah mainly, and I'm going to summarize it in more of a story form, not farm. So Jeremiah, the prophet, is in Jerusalem. He's in prison. He's been imprisoned by Zedekiah the king for prophesying against Israel, Jerusalem, and Zedekiah himself. Zedekiah can't take the criticism, or I'm not so sure if Zedekiah can't take the criticism, or if it's like modern day laws. He doesn't want the talk of Jeremiah to bring the hopes of those in Jerusalem down, because Jerusalem is literally surrounded at this point by a Chaldean army. They've already built siege mounds around the city. And where is Jeremiah? He's in Zedekiah's prison. So to where the second half of the Parsha contains kind of like God's land use code, which is a sore subject around here. But that's there is it's God's laws concerning the sale and purchase of land within the boundaries of Israel. So he languishes in prison, and then God tells him that he has to buy some land, a field. So I'm going to go into some etymology, which is the study of the names of a lot of the people involved in the Haftarah. And I'm going to give you some metaphor of what this means. So I've already said King Zedekiah is the king over the land. His name means Yahweh is righteousness. Now, we know that in the Hebrew culture, names are destinies. So Jeremiah's name means God establishes or appoints or sends. So the person that he's going to buy this land from is Hanamel. You can hear the El at the end of the name, which is the name of God. And his name means God is gracious. Where the field is located is in Anatot. And like Rabbi says, we get the word anecdote, and because it means to answer or respond. So here's the order that this land is bought. Jeremiah is going to purchase a field that he can't go see. He's in prison. I don't know about you, but I want to see the field that I'm buying. Jeremiah has probably laid eyes on it. I don't know, but usually you want to take a look at it right up to the point that you finalize the sale of a land. But he has to buy this land totally based on faith. So there's a reason that he does not see he can't do a final inspection, I guess you would say. I'm going to hope I can get you to keep up with where I'm going with this. So the land, the field is in Anatot, which is the answer. Now Hanamel is the son of Shallum. Shallum, the meaning of the name Shalom is recompense and restitution. So you have the son of recompense and restitution who is gracious enough to sell to one who wants to establish God's land. If you can follow the meanings of these names, it's a story. The meaning of their names is a destiny, it's a story. The deed is drawn up, and it is witnessed by, there's witnesses there of Judeans that are in the prison and many that are held captive. That's not exactly the kind of witnesses you want for a purchase of land as a bunch of inmates. But you have to understand that the prisons at that time were a mixture of political dissidents, people who had spoken out against the king or spoken against the king, and that's what Zedekiah had imprisoned Jeremiah for, was speaking out against him in a prophecy. So it's drawn out and it's handed to a man named Baruch, whose name means blessed. He is a son of Neriah. Neriah's name means lamp of God. And from lamp we get the order. And he's the son of Maaseiah, refuge of God, is the meaning of his name. So the destiny of all of these people, the meaning of their names, is actually leading up to this. So why would you buy a piece of land when your nation is under siege by the Chaldean army? It doesn't seem to be the time to purchase land. Is when the armies have made their way all the way to the gates of Jerusalem, all the way to your city. I don't know. I'm thinking, you know, if you were here in Bayfield and it was surrounded by an army and somebody said, I'll sell you my house. You know, it's probably a really bad time to advertise that. It's not gonna go. But in God's timing, it means everything. In God's plan, it means everything. Even who the witnesses are. So there's a personal correlation to this for many of us. Oh, by the way, they put the deed in jars and they pitch it. It's airtight, just like the Dead Sea Scrolls. If you got something really valuable in that day and time, you put it in a jar, you cap the jar, and then you mud or pitch around it so the sun, the air, and bugs or nothing can get to it to destroy it. And then you put it in a secret place or bury it or wherever. The Haftarah doesn't tell us where they put it. I think it's probably a good idea they didn't write that down for fear of being found out. And it's secreted, so this deed is secreted away. Well, when you look at the entire book of Jeremiah, it's the same theme that you get from the Parsha. Israel has sinned. They have profaned the Shabbats. Jeremiah is proclaiming, is prophesying against Israel. He's saddened by it. He says, that judgment is coming. So it's apparent they're not going to give the land a rest. They're not going to have Yuval either. So it's pretty clear. So how is the land going to get rest if the Israelites don't? Well, God's going to get rest. He's just going to bring them into captivity. And the land is going to, he's going to force the land into rest. So he preserves the land, hides the deed, the fact that there is a deed secreted away is the promise that they're going to return. They know what this means. They know what the purchase of this land means, that someone is going to be coming back. It may not be them. It may be their children. It may not be their children. It may be their grandchildren. Or it may be three or four generations down the line. But the mere fact that this land is sold and the deed is secreted away, it indicates the promise of return. You're coming back. And, you know, when communism took over Russia and the government basically kept all the land, and then communism collapsed, how did they know who had the land? If those that kept records, though, could go to a newly established office, and if you had a certain amount of evidence or witnesses that were still alive, like the witnesses in that prison, then you had a really good chance of reestablishing your land that you that was taken away by the former communist government. So there's not much has changed in that sense. So on a personal level, the metaphor of this is you may be safe until you step into this walk, and then you may be surrounded. The day that you take the journey, the very eve of this purchase of this land, they're surrounded by a Chaldean army. So the day that you take this journey may be the eve of a great deal of persecution. You may be tested 20 years from the day that you come into faith. You may be tested the day after or that evening. And you may only have the promise of restoration to your children and not to yourself. Not to you, maybe not even your grandchildren. It may go well beyond that. But it's clear that corruption is destroyed and restoration is promised, that there is a restoration. So we live on the promise. We don't live what we're going to directly get. We live on the promise of what may occur generations down the line. So I have a lot more respect for Jeremiah. A lot of people like to call him the weeping prophet. You know, it kind of makes him sound weak. You know, he's walking around crying all the time and whatever. But you know, it takes a pretty brave guy to stand up in front of his king and say, you're going to be taken into captivity and all of us are going to be in bondage and you're going to face your captors. And then knowing what the outcome was to be thrown in prison. So anyway, just some facts I wanted to share with you on the Haftarah. Oh, Shabbat Shalom.